Hi, this is Andy Bertram, voice of the Auburn Tigers, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast. Roar Eagle!
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 649.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick!
Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment and by people like you. The anxiously awaiting football season and basketball season, Auburn family, which is the AU Wishbone family, our Patreon.com family, and we appreciate your support. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
John, we've got stuff to talk about tonight. We've got basketball stuff going on. We've got football stuff going on. It's starting to get cranked up a little bit. And to help us kind of navigate our way through all this stuff, we're going to have a special guest join us in a couple of minutes.
We're very excited about that special guest. He is Jerry Hennen.
Yep.
Longtime Auburn supporter and writer, and watches a lot more basketball than we do, I think. So I have some good thoughts about the basketball team and what we can take away from that. And we'll talk about thoughts for the football team.
He's been on our show before, and he also was featured in We Believed, both in the audio and print formats. And so we're excited to have him back, and he's going to join us in just a second. Do we have any other business to get to before we go out there and turn on the Joe Cribbs car wash and bring him in?
Joe Cribbs car wash is a throwback.
It is.
Van, have you ever been pursued while on a moped?
I've never been on a moped, so I couldn't tell you that. I couldn't say I have, but I know it happens sometimes.
It sounds like a denial or an evasion there.
Well, you know what's interesting is he's not the first Auburn quarterback, TJ Finley, to ride on a moped around the campus. And the thing that's amazing is that nobody ever found a way to try to entrap Cam on his moped with some kind of, you know, you could just see it, right? Some Alabama fan cop pulls Cam over. Well, yeah, see here, you failed to signal when you went off that sidewalk over there, son, so you're going to have to miss the next two games, including the Iron Bowl. I mean, that surprises me, is that Cam never got in any trouble because he used to drive his little moped all over campus.
Well, let's review the brief and
sordid history of the
flowery Auburn history of Auburn quarterback suspensions. I know there have been whole other teams where coaches like banned scooters and mopeds because there was so much stuff going on.
Really?
Florida and Georgia in the past have had a number of moped related incidents, but at Auburn, let's just talk about QB.
suspensions.
I don't think this is anything serious, but just to relate it to other things.
Well, I think we probably start with Jeff Berger, right, in 1987. There were two incidents with Berger in 87. We covered these in We Believe. There were three Berger. The more you start opening up the cornucopia that is Jeff Berger's career at Auburn, the more you find. All right, there were three. It's turning into the Spanish Inquisition, and I apologize. That's something that's on the soundboard.
It's one? This one, don't know two?
No, nobody expects the Jeff Berger violations. There was the fight in the Crystal parking lot. Mm-hmm. There was the plagiarization accusation from Dr. Gene in writing the paper, and there was going on the hunting trip with Jim Thompson in the airplane. Mm-hmm. And each of those got him in a little bit of trouble at a different time in his career. I don't remember which one it was. I think it may have been the fight in the parking lot that caused him to miss the first snap against Florida in 87. Remember that? We had Florida in for the big game. It was Halloween night. The word was that Florida had practiced all week with their scout team quarterback, had the word convict taped onto his jersey to represent Berger. And we beat the snot out of him. It was so glorious, like, what, 29-6 or something like that?
It was wonderful.
Oh, yeah, with Emmett Smith and everything. So there were three incidents with Berger, but Pat Dye never let that stand between him and having his starting quarterback. And I, you know, the academic side of me as a college professor is kind of like, yeah. But the Auburn person in me is like, yeah, Pat Dye, man, go, baby, go. And that's just that's the duality. It's the dichotomy of being an Auburn fan, growing up as a huge Auburn fan, and then going into academia, is that half of you is saying, oh, no, this is so embarrassing. Why are we, you know, coddling this rule breaker? And the other half of me is like, y'all better not keep my quarterback on the from playing on Saturday, you know. And it's hard, you know. It's hard.
All right, so then let's go to the next one, I believe, was Nick Marshall.
Yeah. Yeah, right. He got in a little bit of trouble at the beginning of the season, and I believe Jeremy Johnson had to start the Arkansas game that first game of the year.
Played the first half, which led to some people on this podcast speculating about the greatness of Jeremy Johnson based on one half of glorious football against Arkansas.
Oh man, yeah, half. So, Sean White got in trouble some. And our quarterback that never actually played for us, that ended up being like a tight end or something, and now he's not even in football anymore. But remember, he was supposed to be our savior probably about seven, 8 years ago.
Not Tyler Queen.
No, that was the elbow guy, as I always call him. This was the guy that came in, was a pro passer, and he ended up just not doing anything, like didn't go to class or whatever, and now he's like a sports agent in Miami or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, he was in trouble a lot. I can't think of his name. He was one of Gus's quarterbacks that just kind of blew up in our face like they always seem to.
Pre-Stidham?
Yes, pre-Stidham. Pre-Stidham. All right, we'll figure it out. And in fact, we are joined now by Jerry Hennin. Jerry, welcome aboard the AU Wishbone.
Hey, Van. Hey, John. It's great to be on the show, guys.
Oh, we're Thanks so glad to have you. Yeah.
Of course.
So you've done a number of Auburn sports-related things, and I know back in the day you had the Joe Cribbs Car Wash, you've written for the War Eagle Reader, you've done some stuff for CBS and all. What am I leaving out that's important?
That's my Twitter account now is probably the main thing. That's the point where we're at right now. No, that's correct. I started at the JCCW way back in the day. Latched on with the War Eagle Reader. And when I write Auburn stuff, that is still where it appears, and then I was at CBS Sports for about, I want to say, 4 or 5 college football seasons as well, doing college football writing for those guys. Had a great time with it. I am now a stay-at-home dad, which keeps me pretty busy, as I think most of the dads out there could appreciate. So my blogging Auburn time has not, unfortunately, been what I would necessarily like it to be. But when I do write, it's still at the War Eagle Reader. I'm still on Twitter, way more than I should be, honestly. But that's at Jerry Hennin. That's sort of, unfortunately, where most of my writing output is coming these days, is at 240 characters at a time. So I would say, keep an eye out there, keep an eye out at the War Eagle Reader. When I do write something, that's where it shows up.
Good deal. Nice. So John has mostly, I added a little bit, but John mostly has put together some fine questions for you related to Auburn sports, yeah. And I'll let him go ahead and fire off with that.
All right, let's start with this. Like, what did we learn, if anything, from the basketball games in Israel?
Oh, man. Well, we learned how much fun it is to float in the Dead Sea, for one thing. I've never been there myself, but, man, that looked like a blast. Like, every time they showed those clips, I was like, man, I got to get over there. Basketball-wise, I feel like we say this every single year now. Like, oh, well, this is going to be the deepest, most talented team in Auburn basketball history, right? Or at the very least, like, the most since Sonny Smith's, like, heyday in 84, 85, et cetera. But I think we have to say it again. I think this is, if maybe not at the same sort of raw ceiling NBA talent that we saw last year, with Jabari, who, every Auburn fan is going to tell you should have gone number one overall, with Walker Kessler, who's, block percentage, should have been published by, Playboy or something. It was so obscene. And of course he went in the first round as well. I don't know if this team is going to have quite that sort of sky-high NBA talent, but in terms of depth, it's absurd. You know, I think sort of the question coming into this was like, will Chance Westry and Jahni Broome, you know, will the newcomers on this team be ready enough to contribute that we can say, oh, well, despite what they lost last year, they still have the same level of, you know, talent, the same level of depth, you know, maybe spread out a little bit more across the roster rather than concentrated in these, you know, this one sort of superstar front court. And that to me got answered. Like Westry looked like the sort of guy who, if he gets the minutes, might only spend 1 year at Auburn. Like he's an NBA athlete. Like that was what he was billed at coming in. That's what we saw in Israel. You know, more than one person was like, now, you know, I don't know if we necessarily expect him to only be at Auburn for one season because the fight for backcourt minutes is going to be so tough with, you know, KD and Zepp and those guys. You know, so I'm definitely not predicting that. I'm hope, you know, that's not a discussion we have in some ways. I mean, it's so weird being an Auburn basketball fan where we're having these discussions now. It's like, well, there's this guy who's really good, and I hope he's really good, but I hope he's not so good that he goes to the NBA after one season. It's still uncharted waters, totally, I feel like. Yep. But, you know, that's even after those few games, just watching Westry and those little flashes that he had, particularly in the first two games, you know, that's what the discussion we're having, I think, about him. And, you know, if he gets the minutes, I think we're probably going to continue having it. You know, Broome was sensational. That didn't surprise me necessarily. I think if he'd been at a program other than Morehead State, you know, there wouldn't have been any kind of, like, doubts or skepticism. Not that there's been a whole lot. Anybody who saw him play for Morehead knows that that guy absolutely 100% can play SEC high caliber basketball. So that's not a surprise, but still it's nice that, like, oh, well, you know, his foot didn't fall off over the offseason. You know, he was sensational. I, you know, probably their best player, maybe along with Green, in the final game today against, you know, the Israel real national team. Those are pros. Like, those are very, very good basketball players, all season professionals. And Broome was sensational again today. You know, Donaldson can contribute. You know, Traore is the other, you know, really sort of high level newcomer. Again, you know, the athleticism he's put on display with those three guys, those three newcomers in particular, Traore, Broome, and Westry, performing the way that they did. I'm comfortable saying again, you know, it's the deepest roster that Bruce has had. It's the deepest roster I've ever seen play for Auburn basketball. Like 1 through 11 or 12. The fact that Chris Moore, who again had a great game today, is a, I think, a terrific basketball player, would have been an absolute lock to start for, you know, basically every Auburn team I saw between like 1988 and for sure 2017 or something. You know, that he's like going to be the 10th or 11th man maybe again, it's just outrageous.
Yeah.
That's the truth.
Absolutely. So who should we be most excited about? I know that what I saw from the – I saw the middle game, and I saw that – was it Trahor that had like the first 11 points in the game or something crazy? Yeah. With those other players around him and he still was able to dominate like that? So who should we be the most excited about and why?
The person I was most excited about watching those games, and, you know, he's not going to be the highest impact guy on this roster. There's just too much, again, too much talent across the board. The guards are spectacular. But the guy I was most excited about watching over these three games was Dylan Cardwell, because I was not prepared to see him look as sharp and as good as, you know, he did. I don't think with Traore around, with Broome around, you know, I felt like coming into, you know, we're obviously not at the actual season yet, so it seems weird to say we're coming into this season when they're, you know, they're still playing exhibitions and fall practice hasn't even actually started, et cetera, et cetera. You know, but coming into this series, let's say, you know, Cardwell is one of those guys where you say, okay, well, Traore's here, he can play the five. You know, Broome is here. You know, I can't imagine him not starting at center. So where does Cardwell fit in? And Cardwell sort of, I think, responded to those sorts of very natural concerns by coming out and looking like a different player. He looked to me like the most improved player of the holdovers that Auburn had on this roster. Now, I think, you know, Flanagan, I think, was very encouraging. You know, his Last season, I don't think went as well as he would have liked it to, especially on the offensive end. The guy was coming off an Achilles injury. Like, he nearly tore the thing. He had surgery in, I think, September. You know, and so he really needed to be cut so much more slack, especially in the offensive end. For me included, you know, it's just frustrating when at times last season Auburn just really needed a little bit more spacing, a little bit more playmaking from the three, and Flanagan just wasn't ready to provide it because of the injury. You know, it's not that we know he can't do it. We saw him do it as a sophomore. He had such a fantastic season that year. I can't wait to see him get back to being the player that he was as a sophomore, the player that we know that he can be. And we saw glimpses of that as well in Israel. So I'm super excited about that as well. But Cardwell was the most improved player on the floor, I thought, for Auburn. The take he had in the first half today against the Israel national team, where he kind of saved the ball at half court, two dribbles, and dished to Traore for a dunk. I'm pretty sure it was Traore. That was a play that was not in his game the first couple of seasons. If he had the ball in his hands anywhere other than sort of like at the post, you definitely didn't want him putting it on the floor, and you certainly didn't want him trying to dribble drive and playmake from the top of the key. And he did that all in one very smooth motion. I was so impressed. I was impressed with him throughout entire series of games. And again, I think it's another cherry on top of the sundae where you say, well, you know, maybe you can make an argument that if Traore and Broom were playing at the four and the five, then, you know, Cardwell maybe wasn't, you know, if we're talking about like a national championship, an SEC championship caliber roster, you know, is Cardwell going to be up to playing as the backup five, which we know he is because they won the SEC last year and he was playing the five. But still, like, that's not even like a doubt anymore either. Like, that hole is completely covered. It's a strength. It's not even a like, oh, well, you know, they'll be able to get by. Cardwell, it looks to be ready to have a fantastic season, possibly even push for a starting job. I don't know if he keeps playing like this. It's just, you know, again, that's what makes me so excited watching these games, is that I can't pick out a hole in this roster. Like, I don't see any point in the rotation where I say, well, you know, maybe Bruce could have recruited a little better there. That place doesn't exist. They've got the guards, they've got the wings, they've got the bigs. It's all there.
All right, so how will this team, like, stylistically be different than last year's basket team? Especially, like, they have a center that plays more with his back to the basket.
They do. I think, you know, that's one thing, is that last season, something we could have, I think they could have done a little bit better job of, when the shot clock was running down, there's a little bit too much, you know, hero ball kind of is the word for it occasionally, yeah, from Johnson and Green, for where, sure, you know, things broke down and it's just kind of, well, let's hoist up a shot. And hoisting up a shot is better than a turnover. Like, there's some value in that that I think some basketball fans don't always recognize. You know, if you miss a shot, you can go rebound it. If you just turn the ball over, you can't. But there just wasn't enough sort of confidence and consistency in the late shot clock offense, especially when you had Jabari Smith. Like, in those situations, I'd rather have Jabari rising up and shooting a jumper than Green or KDJ rising up and shooting a jumper. So I think they needed to find him more in those sorts of situations. I think having Broom as an outlet for those sorts of situations, where if we can get him posted up with like 8 seconds on the shot clock, he can make something out of that. You know, so I think a year's worth of experience for Green and Johnson in those situations, still having that outlet in the front court, I think will be a big help. I think in general, though, we're going to try and avoid those situations entirely by just playing even faster. I thought that was an interesting thing about, you know, these games in Israel. They really seemed like they were pushing the pace. And, you know, that's, again, something that was exciting to see from guys like Cardwell, Broom, Flanagan. You know, everybody's pushing the ball up the court, making the right reads in transition, which is something, you know, Johnson in particular last year, I mean, you don't want to try and rein him in because that's what makes him so special. If he's got the ball in the open floor, man, he's gone. He's going. Like, that's what he's going to do, and he is going to try and score. You know, we just got to work on, you know, occasionally there's another guy open who maybe can dunk the ball instead of making the difficult layup. But he's working on that. Like, he was just a sophomore last year. He's going to be a junior this year. You know, it's not just going to be him. It's going to be everybody, I think, trying to play in transition. You know, it's going to be, I think, also just a sort of more team-oriented more ball movement kind of thing. And, you know, again, that's not necessarily Johnson's forte all the time. Green at times got a little bit of the ball stuck a little bit more. But that was happening because teams were cutting off the pick and roll. Like, that was their bread and butter through the non-conference season, through the first part of the SEC season. That was what Kentucky could not handle in the game at Auburn Arena, was the Green-Kessler pick and roll, and they ran it at him to death, and Kentucky just never really adjusted. As the season went on, other teams adjusted a little bit more than that, and we never really got a good counter to that other than, hey, Jabari, would you mind sticking some 15-foot jumpers? Now, having the best 15-foot jumper sticker in all of college basketball, you know, it's not a bad plan, you know, but it still could have been a little bit more effective, a little bit more sort of ball movement type offense. And I think with Green having another year of experience, I think with Broome, again, giving him a great target in the pick and roll, you know, I think that action is going to be harder to stop. I think Green's going to be able to make his second and third reads a little bit more option out of that action. You know, I think the ball is just going to kind of move a little bit more, you know. So I think in general, I just think it's going to be sort of a little bit more, you know, a little bit more team basketball on the offensive end is what I expect to see in terms of the difference. Defensively, I think, you know, again, what we saw, you know, we're recording after the final game of the Israel trip today against the Israel national team, and that team can pass the ball. Like a lot of these European professional teams, those guys will pass the absolute heck out of the ball. And we saw that on several possessions, especially in the first half. I thought Auburn's defense, for being in their third competitive game as a team, actually defended that really well. They were rotating pretty crisply. You know, they gave up some shots, especially in the first half, that you kind of expect Israel to knock down. But, you know, for being at this stage of the season to be rotating that well, the defense is not going to take a step back. I'm ready to go on record with that. Like, they, despite not having Kessler, as great as he was and as fantastic an anchor as he was, the defense on the perimeter, especially with Green and Jasper and KDJ, and, you know, now you're throwing Westry in there too, who I think is going to be an absolute menace. This is going to be an outstanding defensive team.
I'll say this. I mean, I think that we did better against the Israelis than the Syrians and the Egyptians did, so we can't complain, right? I mean, we took two off.
You can say that.
That's two more than they ever did, so I don't even get to Jordan.
I'm just glad Katie Johnson didn't start some international incident.
Well, if there was ever any Auburn athlete who you're at risk doing something that might actually rise to the level – you know, of starting an international incident. Between Katie Johnson and the Auburn Twitter meme army, you know, responding to the actual, like, Israel, the Nation of Israel's, like, actual Twitter feed, I feel lucky that we appear to have escaped without some sort of actual international incident. I'm with you.
I could see Jimmy Carter announcing Camp David 2, Auburn and Israel, sit down with Jimmy for to try to work it out. You know, oh, man. Well, last basketball question, certainly from me here. Then we'll get into football for a minute. Where do you see this team's ceiling is going to be? I mean, I know it's kind of early to try to predict anything, but, I mean, compared to previous years and everything, where what can they do?
I think the ceiling is a national championship. This is college basketball. Yeah. If you get into the tournament, North Carolina was an 8 seed last year and played for the national title. You know, if you get into the tournament and you are not, you know, it's, you don't want to be an 8 seed, it's possible. But if you are in the tournament and you are one of those top 4 seeds, sometimes even if you're lower than that, and you get hot at the right time, you can win a national championship. Like, you don't have to be, you know, a 34-2 type of team going into the tournament, you know, to win the thing. I, you know, the closest Auburn has ever come to a basketball national championship was a team that most people considered underachievers for most of the SEC season. And then they got hot at exactly the right time. And if Chuma stays healthy and, you know, we get just a little bit of the rub of the grain at the end of that Final Four game, I think they win a national championship that season.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
You know, and I think the team that we're going to see this year has that sort of ceiling. I think the players on it have that kind of talent. I think particularly You know, if Wendell and KD can shoot just a little bit better, which I think they're absolutely capable of doing, I think that's the ceiling is there. We've seen teams, you know, seven seeds lower, you know, get to the Final Four. Once you get to the Final Four, anything can happen. I think it's not in any way an exaggeration to say that those kind of outcomes are in play for this team. I think an SEC championship is in play. This is just we are the Auburn basketball is that kind of program. Like, this is how you win a national championship is you have the kind of program where you go to the NCAA tournament every season, where you have, like, a decent seed every season. You're not scraping in through the first four, you know, and you go, and eventually everything comes together and you win a national title. Like, you know, it's not easy. You know, Kentucky hasn't won one under Calipari, you know, for quite a while. You know, it's just like you can look at, you can rattle off all the blue bloods that have not, you know, actually pulled it off over the last several years. But this is the way you do it. Like Virginia, you know, under Bennett, the year before they won the national title, they lost to the 16 seed UMBC in the first round. Like, it's just, you just keep hammering at it. You go to the NCAA tournament, and then you go again, and you go again. And sometimes you lose in the second round of Miami. Sometimes you go to the Final Four. And if Bruce Pearl stays at Auburn long enough, I fully believe that one of these years, maybe it's this year, maybe it's in the future, at some point he's going to go to the NCAA tournament. It's all going to come together, and they're going to win a national title. And I don't see any reason that it could not be this season. Of course, it's not likely, but there's no reason to rule it out either. None at all.
It's not likely for anybody, really. You know, I always say winning the Final Four, winning the NCAA National Championship, it's like winning the Indianapolis 500. It's a two-step thing. One, you've just got to be in the mix at the end, and then it becomes a lottery.
Yes. Yeah, really? That's absolutely right. Like, you look at, again, the national championship that Virginia won that we wanted, right? Yeah. You know, they needed a miracle to beat Purdue in the Elite Eight. They absolutely should have lost, you know, to Auburn. In the Final Four. And then I think they went to overtime with Texas Tech and benefited from another questionable call late in that game as well. So, you know, it just, you know, you have to be good enough, but you also have to catch the breaks. Auburn didn't that time. Doesn't mean they won't next time.
And we caught a break in the first game. We absolutely could have lost easily.
Oh, yeah. That year, the New Mexico State game is, you know.
Guys shooting for
the always think about, man, I think you'll appreciate this as a science fiction author, that Terry Pratchett described it as the trousers of time, where, like, you can either fall down one leg of the trousers of time or you fall down the other. And that New Mexico State game was the Auburn basketball all-time sort of trousers of time moment, because, you know, they absolutely could have lost that game, and just none of those – incredible, wonderful things would have happened that happened.
It's amazing.
You know, so it's basketball is a funny sport, man. I mean, it's all sports have some of that to an extent, but I feel like basketball maybe has it even more so, where one shot, one call, that sort of thing. You know, so that is when I look back on that tournament run, I that's what I try to hold on to, is that it didn't have to happen at all. They could have lost to New Mexico State.
Absolutely.
You know, things never had to happen like that at all. So we should try and emphasize the positive as opposed to Ty Jerome double dribbling. But there are some days when that's easier than others.
Man, I just had to rewatch that game, you know, when we were finishing up the book, because I went through and, like, described in excruciating detail that entire game, and especially I think I took 4 pages to describe the last 10 seconds of that game, and it was just like I was like razor blades on the keyboard trying to type that stuff. It was agony. I was so glad when it was done. So John, you want to change to a sport that we've had more fun in the past with, but we're not so sure about now? What do you think?
As Vanna, I like to say, basketball is a happy place right now, so let's talk about the other stuff. So all right, we're gonna switch to football. We're gonna talk big picture, you know, kind of existential stuff first, and then talk about this season. So, the question for you to start is, you know, what should Auburn fans' expectations be? How should we feel, kind of now and going forward? With are we, you know, should we reconcile ourselves to no longer being a top-level program? The SEC is expanding. There's all these changes to college football.
Right.
How should we feel at this moment in time?
About the program.
About the program as a whole.
that's
our trajectory.
That's exactly the thing I feel like I've been struggling with this offseason in particular, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm an Auburn football fan. I just watched Alabama play Georgia for the national championship for the second time in 5 years. Really, you know, like, what do I do with this information? Like, there's no reason either to think that we won't see that again in the next 2 to 3 years. Like, and if we don't, it'll be because Ohio State is playing them, right? Like,
yeah.
What reason do we have to expect that to be different? I can't find one. Barring, you know, meteor strike, aliens come down and say, actually, we need Nick Saban to lead our planet. It's a really rebuilding job here on planet, you know, Noxzema 6. I think Nick Saban is the right guy to come down and help. Aside from that, I don't see that changing. Like, the machines that have been built in those two programs, it's pretty tough to find reasons to think that those are going to break down anytime soon. And so what do you do as an Auburn fan? And then that's just one layer, you know, with the layer of expansion. I'm sure you guys are with me. I'm not excited about having Oklahoma and Texas in the SEC.
No.
You know, I don't care about, you know, it'll be cool to play them once. I don't want to play them again. Mississippi State, like, that's a game that I feel like has something behind it. This is college football, right? Like, the 100 years that have come before this one, the 100 times we've played Mississippi State and, you know, Georgia Tech, to pull another name out of a hat, you know, these other programs, even if those aren't our arch rivals, those games, those history still matter. And we don't have that history with Texas, and we don't have it with Oklahoma. We don't have it with Texas A&M. We don't have it with Missouri. It's taken like 30 years to get it with Arkansas. And, you know, South Carolina, I still don't care really at all. Like, every single time we play South Carolina, like, why are we not playing Tennessee or Florida? Why? Like, I just, you know. So, you know, I realize this is very much sort of an old man on his lawn shaking his cane. But, you know, this is another layer where just college football is not the sport now and will be less going forward of a sport where history matters, you know, and less of a sport that I grew up watching. So how do we translate that into what are an Auburn fan's expectations going forward? And the conclusion I've reached this offseason is that I am going to do my best. It's not easy, but I'm going to try to let loose of expectations entirely and take each college football Saturday as they come. And I've sort of come all the way around from where in April and May, I was like, I don't think I'm going to be excited about college football this year at all. Like, certainly at that stage, you know, we'd been through Harsin Gate already, you know, again, still stinging from the national championship matchup. You know, I was like, am I even going to feel like being excited about college football? And I've come all the way around to the point where I think I'm more excited than I was last year or the year before, you know, where I feel like I'm going into it with really no expectations. Maybe Auburn goes 3-9. I don't think that's going to happen. Maybe they go 10-2. That would be awesome. I'm not really expecting that either. But I think what I'm going to grasp onto in college football is the game itself. Those Saturdays when I get up, you know, I have my coffee, I watch a little Premier League, you know, I kind of check in, see what's going on game day. I don't really watch game day, but I like seeing what's happening. You know, you got to watch Corso put on the mascot head. You know, that's just what you do on a college football Saturday, right? And you sit down and you watch the games, and no matter what they do, you know, bring in Oklahoma, bring in Texas, bring in North Dakota State. They seem like they're a solid program, you know, whatever.
Why not?
The games are still going to be the games. They're still going to tackle each other. Tank Bigsby is still going to run through people. You know, there's going to be something completely insane that happens in some Pac-12 game at 10:30 at night, you know, that everybody gets excited about on Twitter. And those days are not going to change. So that's what I'm grabbing onto as a college football fan, as an Auburn fan, is just sort of really saying, okay, I'm going to do my best because I'm not going to be perfect at it. Of course, I'm going to have expectations. We're human beings. We're going to, you know, look at our sports team and say, well, this record I think is probably good for the level of talent that's on the team. This record is probably not as good for the talent that I think is on the team, that sort of thing. But I'm going to do my best to hold on to what college football is to me and what makes it special, and that's those Saturdays. That's what happens during those 60 minutes between the sidelines. And I can't wait. Like, you know, it's been a long time now. It's August. The last time we saw it, you know, was January. The last time I actually, you know, enjoyed it was before that national championship game. So it's been a while, and I'm ready. I'm really ready again. And, you know, I think this is, again, a place where college football is right now, where I'm going to try and make more of an effort to enjoy a group of five games. Obviously, I'm going to watch Auburn every week. But, you know, I don't think I'm going to let myself feel obligated to watch, like, the first quarter of Alabama or Georgia games anymore. Like, I've done that for years because they're all Alabama, they're Georgia, it's the SEC. That's what you do, right? I'm just not going to do it. I'm going to find, you know, Pitt seems fun. They had that quarterback last year. I'm going to watch Pitt games. I'm going to watch, I'll watch UCF. I still have a soft spot for Gus. I'll say it. I think, you know, I'm not the only Auburn fan like that. I'll see how he's doing. I'll watch, Navy's triple option is going to be a lot of fun. You know, there's 150 whatever, you know, FBS games out there. You know, I'm going to watch Auburn's. Other than that, I'm going to watch whichever one just seems like the most fun, the most exciting to watch. And I'm going to be a college football fan with no expectations. So I realize that was a long answer to your question, John, but it's something I've spent, you can probably tell, a lot of time thinking about this offseason after the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I like it because also, like, one of the things we talk about a lot is, like, letting go and enjoying the Saturday for what it is.
Yes.
And not getting wrapped up in the expectations of letting that crush you and stuff. And so,
yeah.
And it's savoring it.
Let me tell you why this seems different to me. Because this has been kind of an ongoing conversation that John and I have been having. We wanted your input. We're going to get next week and everything. Is that when you add South Carolina, Arkansas, and Missouri, it's like, okay, you just added some more white meat at the buffet. That's fine. Texas A&M, like, got a little chewier, a little more leather-like, but, you know, we can handle that. Well, now you not only bring in two teams that could conceivably be at Alabama, Georgia's level, Florida level or something, LSU level, us, you know, or more, but it also takes the number up to 16. It's like not only are you bringing in two teams that will seriously have the potential to challenge every year and take years away from our turn, but the math gets harder too. You got 16 where we used to have 10. So it's like you've got so many more teams now, and you've got harder teams now that I'm not scared of them. I'm just saying the math, you know, we used to get our shot maybe once every 6-7 years. Now I feel like it's going to be once every 10-12 years, and that's just, I ain't going to live forever, man. Come on, you know, it's just too much. It's too big and it's too much to me. So
no, that's the thing is, as an Auburn fan, what I grew up with and what I was accustomed to was like, I don't think I have ever gone into a season thinking like, if Auburn does not win the SEC championship or national championship, this season is automatically a disappointment. I've never thought that in my life. You know, like, we win 9 or 10 games, you know, come up a little bit short because of a tiebreaker, we lose the wrong game, you know, or whatever. It happens, you know. Just be in the mix, right? Like, I want to feel going into the season like it's not going to take an act of God, that it's not going to take the aliens coming down for Auburn to be in the mix to win an SEC championship, right? Or at least, you know, if there's a couple of years where that's not the case, then we'll build back towards where it is, right? And that's not the way I feel right now. Like, I feel like even if Harsin does a phenomenal job over the next 2-3 seasons, recruits as well as he reasonably can, getting through, you know, not just Alabama and Georgia, but the rest of the, as you point out, then, like, you know, increasing middle class, sort of, to speak, not middle class, that's not what I want to say, you know, but there used to be sort of like the big six in the SEC, right? These six teams that have won championships, right, like, since they had expanded, you know, and now it's like there's the big two And then, like, we've got A&M lumped in now at the Big Six. I think they're clearly on that level in terms of talent and, you know, program support and that sort of thing. We're going to throw Texas and Oklahoma in there in the relatively near future as well. Yeah. And it's just like, so we're now not in the Big Six. We're, like, in a pack behind the Big Two. And that pack is increased. Like, exactly. There's not as much elbow room in that sort of chasing pack either. And so, like you said, when is Auburn going to get its turn? Like, when are we even going to feel again like Auburn has a realistic, plausible path towards an SEC championship?
This is precisely,
you know, again, not even talking about a national one, which, you know, that's but, you know, an SEC championship. It just seems at no point in my life has an SEC championship for Auburn football within the next 5 years seemed less likely. Like, hands down, like, not even close. And that's not a shot at Brian Harsin, who I think has, you know, recovered this offseason about as well as you could from, you know, what happened in the spring. I you know, the numbers are not necessarily there for the recruiting class, but the quality is. Like, if you look at our, you know, per recruit average is up over, like, the previous class. You know, he's doing fine on that front. And given what happened before, I'm honestly, like, sort of surprised and encouraged by that. You know, so, you know, that's not a shot at Harsin to say, oh, well, I don't see any way Auburn realistically competes for an SEC championship in the next 5 years. It's just, you know, the hurdles that have been tossed down in front of them by the current college football landscape, you know, it just makes it very difficult. I hope I'm wrong. Obviously, I remain, you know, something of an optimist. I think, you know, it's not impossible. But it just seems less likely, you know, than it ever has. And this is, you know, to get back to what, you know, I said before. So what do we do with that information? And I think that what we do with that information is hope for some thrilling victories. We hope for, you know, something like last season where, you know, for all the sort of frustrations and disappointments we had down the stretch, they beat LSU in Baton Rouge, man. That was something.
It was a great evening.
Not a total waste of a year. That alone, you know, made last season worth something, you know, for all the sort of frustrations that we had down the stretch.
What is your biggest concern with the football team this fall?
The passing game. Like, that's pretty hands down my answer. It's just tough. Calzada, Calzada, let's call the whole thing off. You know, I think it's Calzada, though, right? He had his moments at Texas A&M, certainly. The game against Alabama, he was tremendous. He's got an arm. But you look at his stats, and, man, it's not necessarily the prettiest picture. I think he has a lot of potential. I absolutely hope Auburn's passing game manages to bring it out of him. But I don't think he's necessarily, like, a top-caliber quarterback in this conference. You know, again – you know, I hope I'm wrong. I just don't necessarily see him as being like a game changer necessarily. And maybe he would be with a little more comfort in the system, maybe with a little bit more continuity around them. He doesn't have that either. Like, they lost their, you know, certainly top two wide receivers. I think Schenker came back, so I think they still have their, like, number three receiving target from last year. But there's not a lot of continuity in the wide receiving core either. You know, they lost Hudson, you know, they lost a couple of other guys, and there's not any continuity at the offensive coordinator's position either. We've promoted Kizo. So we've got a quarterback who I think does have a lot of potential and in the right situation could do very well. I'm not convinced this is the right situation yet. We don't have a lot of continuity in the receiving core. We don't have any continuity in the offensive coordinator's chair. So those three things combined make me question how effective Auburn's passing game is going to be. You know, again, I like the hire of Ike Hilliard. I think he's an improvement on, you know, Coach Cornelius, who started last season. You know, but, it seems like a long hill to climb. Obviously, we're going to have Tank. We're going to have Jarquez. We're going to have an offensive line that I think finally will be improved. You know, I look at the guys that they've got and some of the continuity that they've got there. Nick Brohm's at center, I think. You know, you always like having a really experienced center, right? Like the guy to kind of hold it together a little bit. I'm excited about, you know, well, I don't know if I'm excited about an Auburn offensive line, but I think the Auburn offensive line can do the job that they need to do. more so than they have the last couple of years. And, you know, the backfield behind them, I think the running game is going to be pretty solid. But, you know, unfortunately, this isn't the Tuberville era. This isn't 2006, 2007, you know, or before, where, you know, you get a good offensive line that can drive people back. You get a star running back and you're good. Right. Yeah, like right. You just run some play action and, you know, call it a day. You don't really need a quarterback and receivers. you know, it, college football has kind of moved beyond that era, and Auburn's going to have to throw the ball effectively to win football games. And, you know, I don't think it's certainly by any stretch hopeless. That's, you know, I think there is potential there. I think Coy Moore is a good addition to the wide receiving core. You know, it's just, if you're asking me what part of Auburn's roster, what part of this program currently I would have questions about, what if the season does not go as planned, what do I expect to look back and say, oh, well, that was the issue? I think it's the passing game. I think there's a lot of question marks there.
All right. Given that was your biggest concern, what are you most excited about for the football team this fall?
Tank Biggs Bailey! Tank for Heisman! Let's go! Like, that guy, I love watching him. Tank. I really try very hard not to get my dander up at these off-season. It's not clickbait because they're on Twitter and there's nothing to click. Engagement bait, let's call it, where here are the top 10 running backs in the, you know, SEC or the, you know, country or FBS, whatever, and you know, either Tank's not there or he's near the bottom or whatever. And it's like, there's not a better running back in college football than Tank Bigsby. That's my opinion. Like, are there other very, very good running backs? Yes, obviously. There are. There are lots of great running backs out there. Are any of them better than Tank Bigsby? Maybe I've got my Homer McHomerson glasses on. But no, I don't think any of them are better. I think Bigsby is as good as any running back in the country. I think Bigsby and Hunter together are as good as any running back pair in the country. And getting back to, you know, this, like, I'm not going to come in with expectations. I'm going to take things as they are. I'm going to get to watch those two guys run the football this season. And that is going to be a joy because they are tremendous. Bigsby in particular, he's that guy. He is the Auburn running back, right? That, you know, he has the mantle on him, you know, that has been passed down from Bo and, you know, Joe Cribbs and all those guys, you know, through the line, through, you know, Mason and, you know, into the common era. He's that guy. He can run with, you know, maybe not the guys at the very tip top of that list, but he is an Auburn running back, you know, every inch. And I can't wait to see what he does this season.
I worry a little bit about Hunter. I heard that Hunter fumbled in practice, which is a little disturbing. But I know he was really good against our 1AA opponents, but I didn't feel like he did a whole lot in the.
He had the one run versus LSU, right? I think it was late in the game to kind of ice it. So he had, like, definitely that one moment. I think he's got enough of a burst. I think he's definitely less likely than Tank to make something out of nothing. And certainly behind the last couple of iterations of the Auburn offensive line, making something out of nothing has been part of the job description. We all miss Kerryon Johnson, man. Kerryon Johnson was the best making something out of not a whole lot back that we've had in quite a while. We won the SEC West and beat a number one Georgia and a number one Alabama back to back, in large part because Kerryon Johnson could not only keep his head above water, but thrive behind an offensive line that was pretty good, but not really like win the SEC West good necessarily. I think Johnson helped those guys out a lot. And Tank, I think maybe that exact skill, like, he's not quite up to there, but he's pretty doggone good at it. And I think that's sort of a little bit of the difference between him and Hunter. I do think with a better line in front of him, I think he's got, you know, some explosiveness to his game. I think if we get to see that a little bit more, a few more creases, I think he's gonna have a good season too. Again, you know, all of this feels like it's resting on some improvement from the offensive line, which is what we said last year and we said the year before, maybe the year before that. But, you know, I think this is the year for those guys. I really do, that we're going to see some general movement forward. And if so, I think Hunter's going to have a good year too.
So what is the ceiling for this football team then? Where, what can they accomplish? What if they actually, if they hit on all cylinders, what can they do?
I just said no expectations, man.
But we wrote the questions hours ago, man. So you got to answer them like that, like they came together.
Oh, geez, the ceiling. So I look at, again, two things. The running game, which, you know, I already said I'm very excited about. But then also the defense, I think, is going to be very good. I don't know. You know, they're not – I look over, you know, and obviously they've got the two star pass rushers in Hall and Leota, which I'm very excited about. I think those guys are terrific. But there's not a lot of holes on the defensive roster anyway. Not necessarily a ton of stars. Like, they lost Smoke. They lost a couple other guys. But the secondary is very deep. Like, Puckett can play. Pritchett can play. Jalen Simpson can play. All those guys back there, they can play. Like, they've been on, you know, the field in SEC games. They've held their own. They're getting all another year older. Those guys are fine. Like, I, you know, that's been sort of one of the, you know, sort of talking points I've seen a little bit around the, you know, neutral observers when discussing Auburn. Oh, why are they, you know, last in the SEC West, according to the SEC Media Days polls, which I don't know about that. But, you know, the discussion there has been like, oh, well, they lost a lot in the secondary. They're going to be fine in the secondary. They're going to be fine at linebacker, especially if Owen Papo is healthy. They're going to fine there. You know, the interiors, maybe not as deep as I would like. You know, you look at second, third string, you know, maybe. But I think the starter is going to be very good. It's a defense that looks to me like, you know, unless the, again, sort of discontinuity on the coaching staff where, you know, we're not holding over the defense coordinator, we've promoted Schmetting. I don't think that's going to be as much of an issue as maybe it is on the offense because, you know, it's a guy who was on staff last year. You know, I think the defense is going to be pretty good. I think the running game is going to be pretty good. And again, if this was like 2006, I would say, well, that's going to be enough. They're going to win 10 games, right? Because if you've got a strong running game, you got a strong defense, you're set. You know, it's going to have to be an incredible running game, and it's going to have to be an incredible defense to win that, to put together that kind of mark this season, I think. I wouldn't necessarily put it past them when I do think there's so much talent, you know, sort of it's just spread across the defense. It's not, you know, aside from the pass rushers, it's just, you know, a little bit like the basketball team in that there's just everybody over there, I think, who's going to see the field can play. So I think the defense is going to be really good. I'm excited to see what they can do. You know, I just, again, the passing game, I come back to it. I think the ceiling to me looks like 9-3. And that's at the absolute upper end of the register. I don't think they can beat Alabama or Georgia. You know, getting through the rest of the schedule with only one loss, I think is going to be a pretty tall task as well. I think that's the absolute thing is that, you know, Calzada comes in, is more comfortable than, frankly, I expect him to be. You know, they find a couple of guys in the receiving core who have a breakout season who are better than necessarily we would expect them to be. You know, the both lines stay healthy. You know, Calzada stays healthy.
That's,
you know,
a big, that's a big part of it right there is the
quarterback
and keeping him healthy.
Yeah, so, you know, I think that's the ceiling. I think 9 wins is not completely out of the range of plausibility, put it that way. I think that is the absolute upper end, you know, of the possibility spectrum for this team.
John, you had a really important question for him, didn't you, to wrap things up before we get into Guess the Game?
Yep, it's an important question. Jerry, have you ever been pursued while riding a moped?
No, I have actually never been on a moped or motor scooter because I have lived a very lame, timid life, I'm afraid. I had a buddy who was, when we were 15, he had an uncle who had a moped. And this is a full moped, like, you know, not like a little motor scooter, you know, not a Vespa, like the full sort of just piddly, you know, junior motorcycle, basically. And it may have even been 14 at the time. He's like, those things are street legal, and you can get a license for them when you're 14 or 15, a full license. You and me were going to buy my uncle's moped. I'm going to talk my parents into it, and you and me are going to go ride the moped around town. And I was like, okay. fortunately, though, the moped was never purchased from the uncle, and I never actually rode the moped with my friend as a 14 or 15-year-old. And then it just never popped up. Never got around to riding a motor scooter. So no pursuit. I am afraid. I wish I had a great story. Get your motor running. Get out on the highway. No.
Well, apparently that's what TJ did, and that's why he got in trouble.
There you go.
All right. Our final thing with Jerry before we let you run is that, of course, yard sale artist Jared Albrick does us these Guess the Games, and this is Guess the Game number 60. For those that have never heard, Jared solicits these from the listeners. So if you have a game and a play and you can provide him somewhere that he can find the audio, he appreciates that especially. We'll hear first with everything identifying the game bleeped out. And then if we can't get it, then we'll hear it with some clues. And then we'll hear the actual thing. So, and by the way, again, for those who don't know, he only sends us plays from games Auburn won. All right.
Sweet.
So we have to name the opponent in the year. So okay. Here we go. Who can it be
now? Hello, Van, John, the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrick, the yard sale artist, here with Guess the Game number 60. 6-0. We've done a lot of these. I believe I'm all caught up on my send-ins. If I'm wrong about that, reach out and let me know. But for now, we're going to have to do with a Jared selection, so let's get into it.
It's going to be a 42-yard effort with 54 seconds to go in the half. Slippery conditions, a lot of rain. They spot it, put it down, the kick is away. High, long, and good. The second field goal of the game by to extend the Auburn lead to 6-0.
All right, guys, I will see you in the hint file.
Well, it's not the Mississippi State game against Croom because it's 6-0 and not 3-0. We know that.
All right. Who is the announcer?
That was Jim.
Yeah.
All right. So that means the time frame was
1982 to 2002.
All right. And it sounded like a late, I don't think that was an early 80s.
It sounded later as opposed to earlier.
That was a late 90s, 2000, early 2000s sound clip. The field goal in the rain. Jerry, do you have a thought?
If I had to guess, it'd be the 2000 Florida game because the field was slick for that game. The Damon Duval game winner at the end. That was 2000, right? Or was it 2001? 2001, excuse me.
Now that game was the one where it was supposed to rain, and the rain came blowing in just as Duval was kicking that very last field goal to win it.
Right, were the conditions not sloppy before that one?
No. I was there, and I kept thinking.
I may be off.
And it came at the very end. So,
wasn't there?
I was watching it on TV, so it's. I wasn't in person for that one.
Yeah, there was no rain until the kick was up. Wasn't there an LSU game
with bad weather and we kicked some field goals, or no? No.
Yeah, I don't. The rain games are so memorable, but that didn't seem like. I mean, the West Virginia game is the one, obviously, but that wouldn't be Fife.
It was that game was also higher scoring. Like West Virginia scored way more than 0 points in the first half.
Oh yeah, it was 6-0 Auburn in the rain. What about the 2000 Iron Bowl in Tuscaloosa?
I was gonna say there was the Iron Bowl that ended 9-0, right?
That's the one I'm thinking it might be.
Yeah.
All right.
I like it.
Let's hear the hint. Here's the hint file.
Let's get rid of that bleep.
It's gonna be a 42-yard effort. With 54 seconds to go in the half. Slippery conditions, a lot of rain. They spot it, put it down, the kick is away. High, long, and good. The second field goal of the game by Damon Duval to extend the Auburn lead to 6-0.
I think
Okay. I bet you guys have got the answer by now, but we'll see. I will see you in the answer file.
I feel good about it, guys. What do you think?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, let's hear
it. I can't imagine having a better guest than that, after hearing Duval. So we're talking about a 6-0 game at the half where Damon Duval was doing the kicking in bad conditions. I think we're looking at that Iron Bowl.
I think we are. I can't think. If it's not that, I don't know. So here we go.
Right, exactly.
All right, Van, John, if you guys guessed that this is the 2000 Iron Bowl where Auburn pitched a shutout, 9-0, all field goals, all Damon Duval, all night, then you are correct. Again, if I missed your Guess the Game suggestion or you have one for me, reach out to me on social media. I am at Yard Sale Artist, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. It's all at Yard Sale Artist. Or if you just want to send me an email, you can send it to Jarrod. That's J-A-R-R-O-D at theyardsaleartist.com. And with that, Van, John, happy 60th Guess the Game, and whoa, wriggle.
Please clap.
Good job, everybody. Good job.
That was fun.
All right. All right. Well, that was awesome. Jerry, we want to thank you so much for joining us for the show tonight. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Guys, it is great to be on. Would love to do it again, you know, sometime. You guys do a great job. And, you know, big War Damn Eagle. And, you know, I'll see you guys around the Twitters.
You got it. All right.
Be careful out there.
Be careful on your moped. All right, so we appreciate that, Jerry. It's always good to hear from Jerry. But now we've got to thank the patrons that made shows like that and Jerry's appearance on it possible. And those great folks include, and by the way, if you'd like to join their ranks, we sure could use you. Football season isn't here yet. We always experience a dip in the spring and summer. But if you'd also like to get a hold of the Auburn Basketball book, Auburn Basketball from Barkley to Bruce, that is currently only available to our patrons, just go to www.auwishbone.com, www.auwishbone.com, and click on the big orange button to become a patron. At that point, you can sign up for whatever amount you'd like, and you can be part of our family. We will call out your name and thank you, and you can put whatever you like that will fit into the name blank, and I will read it, and sometimes it even includes sound effects. So, our patrons in, again, www.auwishbone.com, our patrons include Samuel Salvatore, Chris and Clinton Stewart, Carl Von Drunker, Dr. Crackham, Bradley Blackman, Daniel Odom, Gary Grant, a.k.a. AU Fan at KSC, Logan Chilton.
You sit at my table.
Matthew Flowers, Michael Kirshner, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, 76 Tiger, just demoted to janitor at Soundboard of... Oh, I'm sorry. I did one of those things where you read the stage instructions. Dang it! 70. It's not as... It's harder than you'd think. 76 Tiger, just demoted to janitor at...
Jones Barbecue and Foot Massage! Jones Barbecue and Foot Massage!
Always enjoy an excuse to play that one. And Kanjian... barbecue special hype. Oh, you know that's right. And that's coming up in 2 weeks, right?
Very excited. August 22nd, barbecue episode.
The biggest, it's always our biggest show of the year. And we say it is whether it is or isn't. And that's where we're going to reveal the records of every SEC team this fall, including your Auburn Tigers. Ben Bloodworth, Chris Hilton, assistant manager at
Jones Barbecue and Foot Massage. Jones Barbecue and Foot Massage.
Got a double helping of that. Chris Thrash, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Earl Ricks, Eric Morgan, Bobby, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B. No one fights like Gaston. Old Mrs. Miracle Medical Staff, I'll Go Rhythm and Blues, Paul Miles, Phil Davis.
An unwanted neighbor that comes over and visits.
From the Weather Channel, Reynolds Wolf.
Thundersnow.
Robo Harson, Sarah Browns. Shabbat Shalom from your 2-1 Auburn men's basketball team. Thank you, Rusty. Steve Harlan, Theodore Gary, War Eagle Always, Warhammer 6, WDE Richie. Russia, number one. Iran, number one. Bama, number one. Oh, somebody really enjoys our little bit there. Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Body, plus... and joining me, as always, is my patron, Patrick Williams.
Please clap.
Auburn Blue, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, what... Oh, Boris has been tweeting out some of his pictures that he took when he was in the loveliest village on Memorial Day. So if you haven't, if you're not following at Boris AU Tiger, one word, at Boris AU Tiger, he's got some really cool pictures of him and his little friend Weagle the Eagle when they visited Auburn. It's really cool. Brandon Smith, Carter Glaus, Cato the Barner, Colby Butler, Corey Smyer, Darris Benton, David Simpson, Di Bama, helping Van upgrade his installation. Somebody got to get around to that. Hugh Anderson, is that a mullet on your logo? Yes, it is. Josh Teal, Kevin Kinoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, Mike Finley, Papa Todd, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Timothy, Tony Perry, Weagle 87. Mark always wants us to insert favorite soundboard audio. I think this time it's going to be...
And that's nothing but pure and simple old-fashioned communism.
There we go. I rearranged my soundboard a little bit this time to make it easier. So, of course, it's much harder now because nothing's where it used to be. A.J. Herman.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
Alex Nguyen, Ben Amos, Ben Regas, Brian Albanese, Charles Mooney, Chris Como, Chris Braun. If I'm mispronouncing everybody's names, I'm sorry. I'm just trying to get through them tonight because we're almost to the end. Colonel Dad, Construction Tiger, Daniel Barnett, Daniel Witten, Elizabeth Donald. Oh.
We got to get better at celebrating.
I want early access to the basketball book. Chris, I believe your book is in the mail presently. I'll buy this for $1. James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrecht, Jeremiah Schumann, John Samuel Schenker, Jingleheimer Schmidt, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, JT Jarhead, Justin Bean, Kenneth Brent Rains.
Someone knows. God knows.
A.K.A. Auburn Dad for Life. Loving Auburn, as we've demonstrated tonight, means that you have to...
smoke weed every day.
That's always popular. Mark Squire, MVP, captivating Kathy Bright.
Your love of the halfling's leaf has clearly slowed your mind.
It's not fair to say that about Kathy. She even provided the new audio bit that you may have heard at the beginning of the show. So we really appreciate Kathy. Paul Bankson, Richard Ryder. I enjoyed him in the Nova comic books. Robert Drain, Royce Alvarez, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Spanky. Being at the bottom of this list is like the...
the 11 a.m. Jefferson Pilot time slot of death.
I really appreciate that, like, our patrons know the soundboard clips they like, and they arrange very clever ways to get me to play them. I like that. There is Sports Illustrated's Auburn Elvis, Stephen Thompson, the Slinko family, Trevor Johnson. I knew somebody was going to ask this, and here it is. When is We Believed Baseball from Baird to Big Hurt to Butch coming out? You know, when we look at a question like that, all we can do...
blame yourself.
That's right, Herman.
We got to finish the gymnastics book first.
And the equestrian book. We need to bring Auburn Elvis in. Oh, no. Now he's going to actually... start working on it. I know Elvis. He's like, as soon as I said that, he's like, well, getting out the legal pads. I know he's working on it now. I'm sorry, Elvis. Because he's the expert on that. Work hard. Brant Rumble and Chris, plus our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all. Go to www.auwishbone.com, where you can also find the little instructions on how to order the basketball book, or We Believed. All right. The only other tidbit I had was, here's the interesting thing about the basketball team. Jabari Smith, Houston Rockets. The rest of the team, Hamas Rockets. Come on. Yeah, come on with it. That was not bad. That was good. All right. So next week we have another special guest, which we'll be announcing during the week. Should we go ahead and say?
Yeah.
Go ahead
and say. We're having friend of the program, Brian Stoltz, come on.
Yes,
Brian Stoltz. We are going to ask him questions about what he has learned at Auburn football practices.
That'd be awesome. And he's very observant, very analytical. We're going to really enjoy getting to hear his observations. Yep. Very good. And then the week after that, of course, is the barbecue show, the biggest show of the year. And you get to see and or hear us eat barbecue while the barbecue tells you how Auburn and other teams are going to do. Let's see. We thank the patrons. We talked about the books. We don't have a Fantasy Formula One update because they're on summer break right now. I do have a Dragon Con update just to say real quick. I will let everybody know what my table will be and when my reading will be, because I'll be reading from Auburn Basketball, from Barkley to Bruce at Dragon Con. I guarantee it. And
thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
What do we got?
All right, got a couple questions tonight. First is from Bill Miner, who says, guys, SEC Rewind on the SEC Network had the 1982 Iron Bowl replay where Bo went over the top.
Yes.
I'm not sure where that is on my list, but it got me thinking, which game in Auburn's history that you personally did not attend you would most likely to have been at? Is that it? Is it the 1892 game versus Georgia, just to see if the War Eagle story was true?
Oh.
Could be any area for any reason. I personally say the 1989 first time ever game, since that would have been one of the most electric atmospheres I can imagine.
Well, we were at that, as everybody well knows, right? So we were. I've got to say that the two games I would pick first, I was very fortunate to be at, which is the 1989 first time ever game and the national championship game in January of 2011. Those two, thank the Lord, I was at those. The other one of the Holy Triumvirate, and I was not at it, was the Kick Six. But I was at a lot of others that I was very fortunate to be at, so I can't complain.
Well, okay, so let's pick a non-2013, 2010 game. Okay. A further back game, maybe, or a different. I think the 2017 Georgia Alabama games would have been glorious to be at, because just beating the crap out of those teams in our stadium would have been delightful to be at in person. I enjoyed the heck out of it from here, but
yeah. How about the 42-41 Florida State game in Tallahassee that we didn't get to
see?
Watch?
That's a great one. That game would have been insane to be
insane. And I've heard some people on Twitter that were at it, and they were, you know, whereas we listened to a Jim 5 because it wasn't even on television, which is crazy.
Right. What's another game that was a great game, a historic game that we are not at that you kind of wish you were there?
I would have loved to have been at the 86 Iron Bowl, the reverse to victory with Tillman. I don't know why I didn't go to that one, but for whatever reason I wasn't there, and that was just, you know, because it was a hard-fought back-and-forth game the whole way, and it came down to that last play. And then we had to go out and play defense just like the previous year, but with Van Tiffin not kicking a field goal at the end, thank goodness, so... That would have been a good one, I think. The others in that era I was at, you know what I mean? Like, I was at the Florida game, so were you.
Yep. You know, so. I would have loved to have been at the Putt Bama Putt game.
Oh, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, that would have been amazing to see that in person. I would have loved to have seen, you know, our greatest receiver ever, and our Heisman-winning quarterback play a long time ago. Sullivan to Beasley, but yeah. You know, that would have been fun to see that in person.
The Georgia game that year, I think, is the one that everybody says, you know, he just lit Georgia. He and Beasley lit Georgia up in 71. Yeah. That would have been a good one.
Those are good choices, I think.
Yeah, we haven't, it's just that there's more choices now because we were at everything there in the mid 80s, late 80s, and early 90s, and everything. And you know, I was lucky enough to be there for all the 93 games and 94, and I was there for the 04 season. So, you know,
I mean,
really.
I always think about, like, 2007 Florida maybe, too.
Yeah. I was at I had just moved up to St. Louis area in 06, and I turned right around a few days later and flew back down for the 6, the Trey Smith.
That's what I was thinking about.
Pontiac game-changing performance game where he blocked the punt.
Yep.
I was at that one, but the 7 one when we were down to Gainesville and Byram kicked the field goal twice, that one I would have liked to have been at.
Yeah. Either one of those.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. People thought I was crazy to go to the 06 one. They're like, you're going to get killed. I'm like, yeah, we'll see. Because I'd been at the 94 one in the swamp. I'm like, you can't ever tell me that Florida's always going to kill us. We, you know, we kind of had a thing with Florida back then like we kind of have with Alabama now where, yeah, one team is supposed to be better, but you just don't know, you know.
And we're not afraid of them. So.
Yeah, exactly. We were never afraid of them. That's exactly it. Yeah, Tuberville, after we lost to them twice in 2000, it felt like Tuberville redesigned our defense specifically to stop Florida. And we were able to stop them in ways that nobody else was able to. I think that's a pretty good selection of games that we would pick.
Yeah. All right. And that was a good question. We appreciate that. All right. And then our other question tonight is from Mr. George Gaston, who says, how does the competition in Israel in the second and third games compare to SEC and NCAA tournament opponents? Does this team have any distinct advantages over last season?
Well, first, Jerry made a really good point there that this team hasn't even really practiced hardly.
That's it.
So, you know, they're out there playing against NBA-level players in that third game and held it close the whole way with guys that don't even really know how to play with each other yet. You know?
100% right. And the other thing he made a point that I think is really exciting to think about is we have such great depth.
Yeah.
Why not play faster? You know, why not put the accelerator down all the time and just go at teams and run them out of the gym, and we bring our second five on the floor and they're better than a lot of team starters.
Amen. Yeah, that's one of the things that Bruce I think does so well is in today's college basketball world, your team is completely different every year. You know, at least in football, there's usually some continuity unless you completely change coaching staffs. You know what I mean? You know, like from 2011 with Gus's offense to 2012 with He Who Shall Not Be Named to 2013 with Gus again, we kind of changed dramatically twice. But the basketball team is like that every year with the same coaches just because so many players come and go, and particularly the better ones. And so he's so good at kind of figuring out what they can do and what we should do with it. And that's... And I think that kind of caught up with us at the end of the season last year in the tournament. But other than that, he's been great with it.
So to answer his question, I think the second game we played in Israel, I think that's comparable to a good college team.
Yeah.
That we played against. The team that we played today was a team of professionals, of like 26, 27, 28-year-old guys, one of whom is, you know, was the 10th pick in the draft and is starting for the Wizards, and he's the guy that scored 30, and a bunch of other guys who are playing professionally in Europe, and a bunch of guys who have played, you know, 1,000 games together. You know what I'm saying? Who have played
huge.
A ton of big games together in big tournaments and have have a lot of experience with each other. And so the passing and cutting and stuff is really easy and second nature for them because they have so much time. And as you said, Auburn hasn't practiced, basically.
Yeah.
So they were playing against guys who were, you know, physically mature, you know, solid adult players. And we got guys who were in high school a couple weeks ago, basically, and hadn't practiced. And we were doing, you know, holding our own against them.
I think
most people thought Auburn would lose this game by 20 points, and we were in it with a chance to win at the end. So,
yeah, I felt pretty. All right. Well, I think that's about it. Do you have any final thoughts before we head into we got one more interview show and then the barbecue show?
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to Brian next week. There's a lot of exciting stuff happening in practice, and we're at that time of year where it's like, oh, somebody looked good in practice today. Yeah. Get the little optimism build up, you know?
Sounded like Finley kind of went out there with the first team the first couple of days. Calzada was with the second team, but that's kind of what you'd expect based on how they came out of last year, right? So we'll see how that evolves. I think we're going to see how that evolves.
And Calzada's played some of the first team, and a couple of freshmen already up there playing with the veterans and making stuff happen. J.D. Rim on defense, like Camner Brown on offense, the young receiver out of Florida. Both those guys making some moves early. So.
Sounds good to me. All right, our time is up. We thank you for yours. Wargle, John.
Wargle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
But I do have my copy. Obviously, it is very handy. Awesome. I took it to the beach, read, you know, a decent chunk of it. It's a great read. Like, do you like Auburn football? Do you like to read books? Here is a good book. Definitely. It's a great beach read. Also, let me, you know, give you guys credit for that as well. Like, it's awesome. You know, we were down with my folks a couple of weeks ago and having it in hand under the umbrella there in Gulf Shores was a pleasant experience, to say the least.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.